And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back. We are sitting here on August the 8th. It is far too hot for me outside, Luke. Are you a big fan of the heat?
No, I forget. I'm not a big fan of the heat, but it's not just August the 8th. It's Carter's Day, Beyonce and Jay-Z, thanks to our great governor, Mark Dayton.
Yeah, and PJ's actually taking the entire football team.
No way, seriously? Beyonce.
Yeah, at least that's what he tweeted out tonight. He's going to take them to the Queen concert. By the way, for those of you who don't know who the Queen is, I'm not talking about the band Queen. Beyonce is Bey. Beyonce is the Queen. It's not really a Jay-Z concert. It is Beyonce.
Oh,
I didn't know that. Well, in my eyes, Luke.
Okay, sorry.
In my eyes, it is Beyonce featuring Jay-Z. That's about where we're at. I also want to start off the pod by thanking everybody. We had one of our best days in subscription history, I think, for GI. I told you to expect something last Thursday, and we ended up doing extremely well, especially in comparison to other people around the network. So for those of you that signed up, and I know that there was gaggles and gaggles of you, I greatly appreciate it. Thanks for finally pulling the trigger. And I think that especially with the coverage yesterday, you know, we got photos, videos, practice reports up within a few hours of practice ending. So, again, I want to thank each and every one of you guys for joining Gopher Illustrated.
Guys and gals. Let's be inclusive here, guys and gals.
Gender non-specific. Everyone involved.
Everyone involved. All right. Well, I mean, there's been some real practice. You've gotten to see about 1.25 of practices.
I have seen about one and a half.
Okay.
And I have about, for those of you who don't remember, Minnesota will have an open practice to both the media and the public on Friday at 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. So Friday, August 10th, 4 p.m. at TCF Bank Stadium. It is essentially going to be the first real look we'll get at this team in pads. I don't think that they're going to be tackling to the ground, as PJ mentioned to the media yesterday, that their first scrimmage is likely going to be on Tuesday, August 14th. But again, being able to get any kind of look at the offensive defensive line is going to be very beneficial for especially somebody like me. Mm-hmm. So that would be your next opportunity to go see them. But yes, we did get to see Saturday, August 4th, the Athletes Village. That entire practice and essentially helmets was open to the public. And then I got to be there yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday, Tuesday, and see stretching, which is just absolutely enthralling to watch. Stretching and individual. So,
a great Matt Limegrover once said that bend is important for offensive linemen. So I'm expecting some real detailed description of bend in offensive linemen. So just keep that in your back pocket for the coming conversation.
I'm no Derek Burns, which, by the way, we did get some kind of a carrier pigeon to Derek Burns and wherever he is, whether it's Canada or South America. He is going to be back for his, I think, third season breaking down games on GGR Radio. He's not going to be able to make all of them, just like last season, but he is, I believe, going to be able to make a majority of them. So that is good news. And we're talking about bend and offensive linemen. You know why? Because Derek is being flexible, Luke.
Nah, boy, that's a dad joke if there's ever one. but seriously, I think a real gift that Gopher fans don't realize. Like, Derek Burns is about as good as it gets in terms of breaking down wins and losses for Gopher football. And boy, we are super fortunate to have him join us again.
I like to think while Derek can get into the nitty gritty, and I like to think I can do that as well. What Derek says, I like to think that I can regurgitate it in a more easier to understand language, if that makes sense. So Derek will get into why Minnesota, when they were faced going, you know, power left, why the strong side defensive end couldn't be able to get over the top because it was cover zero and Minnesota was in a slant and a twist. And then I'm just able to come in and kind of say, yeah, Derek, Winston got buried and then the linebackers didn't flow over. And so it was 20 yards. And he's like, yep. And I'm like, yep. And everybody listening is like, oh, okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's keep going.
All right. Well, let's actually get into what you've been able to see thus far, right? I mean, not a lot. Really hard to judge like offensive, defensive line, especially when, you know, there's no pads. But let's maybe start there. Offensive line, you know, I mean, maybe you can project starters, but I got to imagine it's hard to do any meaningful evaluation at this point.
It is for both the offensive and defensive line. I will start off with the disclaimer once again. Do not hold me to these kind of evaluations as I've seen in practice and a half. We'll be back. I think next week we're going to talk where to in the world. Where are you heading this week?
Iceland. I'm going to Iceland.
Iceland? What in the... I know, sidetrack already, but what in the world is in Iceland?
It's a volcanic island. I don't know. We'll find out.
Okay. So while Luke's in Iceland, we're going to have a special teams pod for you guys. And then we'll be back to kind of talk some more what I've seen through six practices by that point, or 4.25, however you want to look at it. And then we'll get into season predictions. But it has been, again, like I said, on August the 4th, Minnesota was in helmets, offense and defense, and not a whole lot to gain from watching these guys up front. And then on the 7th, yesterday, Tuesday, August 7th, I wasn't able to see the team, period. And an individual, the offensive defensive line, didn't do one-on-ones. So when you look at the projected starters for the offensive line, it should be nothing new to you Gopher Illustrated subscribers. I've talked about it religiously for the last few months here. But going left to right across the offensive line, senior Donnell Green at left tackle, someone that had a Pro Football Focus grade of over 80, I believe, one of the top returning starters in the Big Ten, going into his senior year. Someone that, again, I think is going to end the drought for Minnesota in terms of drafted offensive linemen. He has remained healthy basically for the entirety of his career since he got here from Coffeyville Junior College. So he's going to be relied upon heavily there. You look at left guard, that's where you have Connor Olson, redshirt sophomore Connor Olson. It was fun being able to talk to him yesterday, because the nice thing about someone in my position is the first time I ever talked to Connor Olson, he was a junior in high school and he was 240 pounds. I remember seeing him in Minnesota's camp and he was extremely athletic, someone that was long, 6'4", but he was only 240 pounds, but he was very strong for his size. So Minnesota took a chance on him saying, hey, we think you can gain 60 pounds in 18 months, which for most of us, I'd love to gain 60 pounds in 18 months, especially with the way now that I'm getting into my mid to late 20s now, Luke, the way that I've being able to kind of see I can't eat the way I always want to anymore. So Connor Olson now at 300 pounds. Last year, having to start six games at left guard, six games at center, and all of that in his first collegiate season as a redshirt freshman. So a lot on his plate now that he is going into his second year, basically just focusing on left guard. I think he looks a lot more comfortable there. He looks like someone who should be a Big Ten offensive lineman. At center, Jared Weiler. I've talked about my affinity for him. The issue is he's missed nine games the last two seasons. When he's been able to stay healthy, that's when he's been a very good performer in the Big Ten. Again, according to Pro Football Focus, not the be-all, end-all, he is the highest-rated offensive lineman returning, tied with a young man from the University of Wisconsin in that regard. So Jared Weiler, very key to Minnesota's success, in my opinion, on the offensive line. At right guard, you have Marshall's own Blaze Andrews as a redshirt freshman. I talked about this yesterday in my practice report, and with my, not only was there a practice report yesterday, I asked for questions from the Gopher Illustrated members. You know, what do you want me to answer? Unfortunately for me, and very good for you, and that being the listener and the subscriber, 30 of you responded. So not only once I got the practice report done, I'd answer 30 different questions. And one of the things was, who do you think has kind of made the most strides in the weight room in the last 6 to 12 months? I think one of the guys that really pops out to me so far is Blaze Andrews. Now, he was always a big kid coming in. He was already 6'6", 290 pounds. But the way he's been able to kind of transform that body and continue to maintain his 300 pounds-ish, but kind of continue to lose some of that baby fat and add good weight, he's very impressive to look at. I think he's up there with Daniel Faalele's of the world and the Curtis Dunlaps. I think, again, that's why Blaze Andrews was very sought after in that 2017 class. And so, again, I am going to be very interested to see how he looks, because he had a rough spring game, but I know Minnesota has very high hopes. I know the physical potential is there, and that's why I'm so high on Blaze, and that's why this coaching staff is so high on Blaze. But, again, it's got to matter when the pads come on. He's got to be able to block the Gary Moores and the O.J. Smiths of the world. And finally, at right tackle is Meyer Lutheran's own Sam Schluter in his redshirt sophomore year. Again, with Nick Conley unfortunately having to retire last year, Sam Schluter is the one that kind of kicked in. Maybe he wasn't ready of sorts as a redshirt. I believe he was a redshirt freshman last year. But again, I think he's made strides in the weight room. But again, all of this is just kind of superficial. because, yeah, they look great. I mean, they look like a Big Ten offensive line, which I haven't been able to say all the time in many years, in the 7 or 8 years that I've been doing this now. But I think left to right, they all look physically ready. And then behind them, on the right side of the offensive line, Daniel Fa'alele at right tackle and Curtis Dunlap Jr. at right guard, two true freshmen there, two guys that physically are ready. And it's just going to be all about how do they adjust to the speed of the game? How do they adjust to continually going against 300-pounders? How do they adjust to being able to read, you know, if the guy in front of me slants inside, well, that probably means somebody's coming over the top. Again, it's not rocket science. It's just football. So how they continually being able to adjust there. John Michael Schmitz, a redshirt freshman. I think he is the center of the future. He's a redshirt freshman right now. Not the biggest guy, probably only 6'2", but he's very well put together at that 6'2". He's probably going to be Jared Weiler's backup. And then on the left side of the line are upperclassmen Quinn Oslin and Bronson Dobich. Bronson Dobich from Chaska. Again, you know, you kind of look in the two deep, and you can see how, you know, you kind of have underperformers on the left side of the line. Quinn Oslin, Bronson Dobich, guys going into their fourth and fifth years, haven't done a whole lot. And then the other three spots, it's all about, well, we got a bunch of freshmen. Here we go. You know, John Michael Schmidt, redshirt freshman, and then Fa'alele and Curtis Dunlap Jr., both true freshmen. So I am very intrigued to see what they look like on Friday, and then the final three practices that the media is able to see. So it's going to be interesting, Luke, because I think that Fa'alele and Dunlap end up playing just because there's always some sort of injury on the offensive line. So say, for example, Jared Weiler misses time. What I think happens is that more likely than not, Connor Olson slides over to center. And I think maybe Blaze Andrews goes to left guard and you slide in Curtis Dunlap. Mm-hmm. Or if Sam Schluter gets hurt or, you know, God forbid, Donnell Green, you either rotate, if Schluter gets hurt, you put in Fa'alele at right tackle. If Green gets hurt, you shift over Schluter to left tackle and you put in Fa'alele at right tackle. And I know that one of the questions I've gotten on the board is, well, why do we have Fa'alele and Dunlap backing up the two younger guys on the right side? Wouldn't you want them on the left side so that when the older guys graduate? Well, in that same breath, I mean, Blaze and Dunlap, I mean, they're both two freshmen trying to vie for jobs. And so they're both going to get equal reps, try to see who's the best fit there. And again, Fa'alele at right tackle. Minnesota's still trying to figure out, folks, whether he is a tackle or he's a guard. Now, I know because everybody's likely seen the picture on the Twitter machine of PJ Fleck standing next to Fa'alele. Yeah, I'm well aware, folks, he's 6'9", 400 pounds. And just because he's 6'9", doesn't mean he can't play guard. Now, he's worked exclusively at tackle so far, but this is really Minnesota's first long extended look after 6 months of him in a weight and nutrition program. So they're just trying to figure out spots. Again, all of this is very fluid. I know all of my Gopher Illustrated members, Luke, hate when I say that things are fluid because just like in recruiting, nothing is set in stone. And there's not a lot of black and white. There's a lot of gray area. So Minnesota's trying to figure out that offensive line. And I'm very intrigued to see what they look like on Friday when I'm able to see them in full pads.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this offensive line and you see a group, you know, that has struggled with injuries for a long time, a couple guys having to retire over the couple of years. I think you point out, like, while there may not be a lot of experience and you maybe have a couple underperformers, there probably is more depth this year than there has been in the last couple of years. And that in some ways is refreshing. It's maybe not high quality depth per se that you can rely on, but in the same respect, they have bodies and we don't have to start prognosticating about whether a 6'10" or 6'10" tight end is going to have to play tackle in the final game of the year. Knock on
exactly.
Wood.
I mean, yeah, knock on wood indeed, but like you said, it is an interesting mix of depth behind the starters because you have the underperformers on the left side and you have the youth on the right side. And it also is interesting to note that I didn't mention Jason Dixon, the junior college offensive tackle Minnesota brought in. I've talked about it on Gopher Illustrated. There's been question marks as to whether Jason Dixon is going to be eligible academically for this fall. Reading between the lines, I would imagine that he probably isn't going to be eligible for this fall just based off him not being in the two deep, because if he was, he should be absolutely playing right tackle and competing with Schluter to see what it's going to be. But he's been working third string at left tackle. Now, PJ Fleck has yet to say anything about Dixon's status, but I can assure you I'm going to ask him about that on Friday. So, again, that's just me reading tea leaves, kind of trying to figure out what Minnesota's thinking there. But, again, I think there is depth. I mean, in theory, there's depth. Physically, it looks like depth, but these kids have to perform. And, again, if Minnesota is able to keep an offensive line healthy and keep an offensive line unit, you know, playing together for 9-plus games, I feel pretty good about it.
All right, let's switch over and talk a little defensive line quickly. You know, this is a spot last year underperformed. I think that I don't think anybody would argue with that statistically, even with, you know, a lot of talent. Now, I would argue at this point there's maybe less talent than before, but you maybe have the better guys that maybe fit the scheme a little bit better this year. So it'll be interesting to see those dynamics. I mean, what do you see in terms of, you know, maybe projected starters at this point?
Yeah, projected starters on the defensive line are, and when I say by projected starters, I'm not projecting them in my head. This is what I've seen in practice. Both of the practices, the starters on the defensive line have been O.J. Smith, the Alabama defensive tackle transfer, and Gary Moore, going into what seemingly is his sixth year at the defensive tackle spot for Minnesota. And then at the two end spots, at the rush defensive end, you have Carter Coughlin. And at the other spot is Winston Delighty-Boudere. Now, I think Ezi Owatumu ends up surpassing him by the end of fall camp, just physically. Again, when you look at where Minnesota struggled last year, we've talked about this at length in recent weeks. Minnesota, it wasn't really going against Carter Coughlin, even though Carter Coughlin didn't really help against the run. When you look at those big runs against Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa, Wisconsin, it was to Winston Delighty-Boudere's side. It was to Nate Umlor's side. And when you look at Ezzy, he's 6'5", 6'6", 260 pounds. I mean, he looks like someone who should be able to set the edge against the run and allow your linebackers and Antoine Winfield to come down in the box and make the play. But Ezzy, or Big O, as the coaching staff calls him, has to earn that still. So Winston is still starting over Ezzy. And then you look at that other, you know, behind them, you have Royal Silver and then Sam Renner, I believe, Maple Grove zone. You'll remember from the spring game, PJ Fleck gave him a scholarship, and he's in the 2D. I mean, he's beating out Elijah Teague at this current moment, which should surprise no one because we're a week into fall camp, and Elijah's got to earn those reps yet. But you look at that. Finally, before we kind of move on to general thoughts, the other rush end behind Carter Coughlin is Teyon Devers. And I laugh because I know that I'll tell you this much, Luke. Folks don't forget when I'm wrong, but when I'm right, it seems to go in one ear out the other. At least that's what it seems like, because I still have people on GI reminding me about my Hank Epke 2014 hype train.
Yeah, I remember it.
Stop.
No, you came on this. you came and sat right next to me and told me he was going to be a breakout player, and guess what? He wasn't, and I've given you a hard time ever since.
It turns out, folks, Minnesota's offensive tackles in 2014 and 2015 were just atrocious with the speed rush. In my defense, I believe Hank Epke signed with the Chicago Bears, or Da Bears. And do you know what that reference is from?
Yeah, it's from an old Saturday Night Live skit.
I'm proud of you for knowing pop culture. This is a big moment for us.
I know.
Anyways, the whole Hank Epke bit. You know, he signed his UDFA with the Bears, and I have no idea if he's still in camp or not. Turns out Minnesota's OTs were bad against the speed rush, and Hank Epke, when he wasn't able to have a speed rush, wasn't very good. But I'll tell you this much. If there's a guy that I think has made the most progress in the weight room in the last 6 to 12 months, Blaze Andrews would be my pick on offense. But Teyon Devers looks filled out, and he looks chiseled. And the discussion I had today with one of our posters, you know, he reminded me that stop hyping Teyon Devers because your Hank Epke train got out of control and you were wrong. And I'm like, okay, thanks. Well, yeah, I was wrong. I've admitted I was wrong. But what about every other, you know, the other 80, 90% of calls that have been spot on? But my point being, the thing with Teyon Devers has been, Teyon Devers, in my opinion, and I know that some of the coaching staff hold this opinion, he has the quickest twitch off the line of any of the defensive linemen. That has never been his issue. You know, his burst off the ball has been sensational. And that's where, again, you see if he's going against guys that are offensive tackles that struggle against the speed rush, he's able to turn the corner and obliterate quarterbacks. The issue has been when the offensive tackle is ready for that and he's not able to bend the corner, well, he's basically, for a lack of a better term, useless. He doesn't have the pass rushing arsenal to either, you know, stab, spin, set him out outside, cut up, back up, you know, underneath, inside. He hasn't had an arsenal of moves, and that was Hank Epke's fault. Now, Marcus West, I mean, this is essentially going to come down to him. With Carter Coughlin, with Teyon Devers, with Boye Mafe, how quickly can he get them comfortable and have them find success with moves that aren't be really athletic, get low to the ground, and try to turn the corner? How quickly are they going to be able to add a spin move to the arsenal? How quickly are they going to be able to stab inside? How quickly are they going to be able to learn any kind of a set of pass rush moves? So when it gets to the second, third, and fourth quarter, how quickly can this group, once the offensive tackle is burned once by a speed rush in the first quarter, you have to be able to again, diversify there. If he's going to be expecting that, well, then you plant that right foot in the ground, you cut back up underneath, and you try to get to the quarterback. So physically, I think Teyon Devers looks really good. I mean, I think he's bigger than Carter Coughlin height and weight-wise right now, where Carter is still, again, he is has an elite burst himself, but I'm very intrigued to see what Teyon Devers can do. Again, how quickly can he and Coughlin and Mafe add anything to their pass-rushing arsenal? And if they can, I mean, I think that's going to be pretty scary. But defensive tackle-wise, you mentioned it in kind of introducing this position group. Minnesota lost some key bodies. Yes, Steven Richardson among them, who is battling to make the 53 out at this. Is it San Diego
Chargers? It's San Diego. And like, they're
the
decent.
I thought it was the LA Chargers.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Now.
Yeah, it is the LA Chargers. Whatever. It's the Chargers. And
the Chargers.
And then there are a lot of people that are saying he's having a really good camp.
He is. And so when you look at Minnesota now, what they have two gigantic run stuffers, one being O.J. Smith. He told us he's 330 pounds. So you kind of have your nose right there, and then you have to have your three technique and Rob Smith's defense be disruptor. Now, Steven Richardson last year, unfortunately, had to play the role as the one, as the nose, and so he was double-teamed. Well, O.J. Smith can just eat the double-team, and that allows guys like Ezio Atumu, Boye Mafe, Carter Coughlin, Teyon Devers, Gary Moore, Royal Silver to get the one-on-one, and they have to be able to capitalize on that. Now, I know from standing right next to Joe Rossi for 2 days of camp, people are having issues blocking Gary Moore. That's always been the case when his pad level has been low. Gary Moore is one of the strongest kids in the team. If Gary Moore pad level low shows up for 12 games, he's going to get drafted. If Gary Moore, whose pad level gets really high, gets up, he's not going to be much of a help to Minnesota and Rob Smith's defense. Now, what's likely going to happen is something in between where you're going to see flashes and then dull spots. But again, it is going to be interesting to see what happens in this defensive tackle rotation because Sam Renner being your four defensive tackle, does Elijah Teague beat him out? Where does Nate Umlor fit? Nate Umlor is seemingly from starting last year at that defensive end spot, has been passed by Winston, has been passed by Ezzie. You know, where does he fit? Is he the swing defensive tackle? Is he the swing defensive end? It's going to be interesting to see. Again, this offensive defensive line group, I haven't seen really anything of substantial hitting, again, with the lack of practices that I've been able to see so far. But again, Friday, Monday, and then next Thursday, I should be able to get a much better grasp at it.
All right, let's talk a little bit of linebacker. I think I got to imagine at this point, right, we kind of know what we have. We've got some depth there. We got a couple of studs there. I got to imagine Thomas Barber starting. I got to imagine that Kamal Martin might be there as well. But what do we have?
We have starters that I still feel very confident in, and we have depth that is very unproven, which seemingly is the theme anytime where you kind of look. Minnesota's been playing a lot in nickel in the two practices I've been at. On Saturday, for those of you who were there, that was third down installation. So Minnesota being ambitious in the regard that, hey, you know, it's third and four and longer, so we're going to have our pass rushing group on the field. So that's where you have Minnesota nickel, and then they also were in it in different situations on Monday during practice as well. So your starting guys in nickel are Thomas Barber, one of the best linebackers in the Big Ten, in my opinion, and then Blake Cashman, Blake Cashman back from the dead, considering he only averaged 16 snaps a game in the Big Ten last year, even with an ailing Jonathan Celestein, who, by the way, is now an Atlanta Falcon, signed with them, I believe, last week. Those are your two starters. That doesn't mean that these next two guys in Kamal Martin and Juju Huff are not in the mix as well. It's just been the different packages they've been in. Kamal Martin is still going to play a ton. I think Julian Huff is still going to play a ton, especially in pass rushing situations where I think Rob Smith is going to get creative with him on the interior blitz, because he's a tough guy to when he times that snap count. That's what makes him so good, is his anticipation and timing that snap count. The man's generously 5'10", and asking a offensive lineman who's already got a 300 pounder in front of him, in asking him, which one am I going to block, the 5'10", 215 pound guy or the 6'3", 300 pound guy? Especially if he has to hesitate 1 second, Juju's by you and he's likely going to get the sack. But again, that's kind of the role I see for Juju Huff. Kamal Martin and Blake Cashman and Thomas Barber, I think they're going to play a ton. After them, I mean, we're looking at freshmen again.
Right. Not a lot of proven depth.
Braylon Oliver and Thomas Rush physically looked the part as best they can for true freshmen. But once again, I mean, I don't want to test that. I don't want to test that depth. I want to have them ideally redshirt, have them play in their four respective games on special teams, get a taste of things, let them get their redshirt year in, and then really get them ready, especially as Thomas Barber and Kamal Martin get ready to graduate in 2019. So linebacker, I still feel pretty good about.
All right, so let's talk a little wide receiver. This is a position group that I think a lot of people are excited about. You know, again, a lot of basically one known really solid commodity in Ty Johnson. But outside of that, I mean, I think anybody can place their bets just about anywhere, right? Nobody really knows what to expect. We know they're going to be young. I think Tyler Johnson is actually the only upperclassman, maybe Matt Morse. But you know, other than that, there is nothing in terms of experience. And we both know that they like to go three wide a lot, so they're going to have a decent number of guys. So who's getting run with the starters at this moment?
I talked about it on the pods coming in that. Again, wide receiver, I mean, they need to really kind of figure this out still. And through two practices, when everybody's healthy, and by everybody, I mean Tyler Johnson, Chris Ottman-Bell, Demetrius Douglas, and Rashad Bateman, Minnesota can play with those four. I'll tell you that much. I think, and I've gotten texts from members of GI saying, do you like Rashad Bateman? I can't tell. And it's sarcasm, because all I've done the first two practices I've been at is just glow on Rashad Bateman. Again, he was the crown jewel of last class. Minnesota beat Georgia and five other SEC schools for the Georgia receiver. And the kid is special. And he's still learning what he's doing. But to see the athletic ability he has at 6'1", to number one, immediately create separation off the line, and then two, create separation on his routes. And then when he catches the ball in open space, you're just not going to catch him. I mean, he's that fast. Again, he's still learning how to run a route, because he was just able to get by blind athleticism. And again, this was a kid who thought he was going to be a Division I basketball player up until 3 months before his senior year. He did have, I mean, he had Penn State and Virginia Tech basketball offers, and then he decided to focus on football. So this is a kid that's very raw, but the athleticism is just through the roof. Chris Ottman-Bell, when healthy, has been very good too. Again, he is Minnesota's best contested catch winner. I think he's taken a step in terms of creating separation, just being more confident. The issue is, and again, for the first 12 months, unfortunately for Ottman-Bell, it's been when healthy. Because when I was there on Tuesday, he wasn't in one of the injured pennies, but he didn't practice.
And this goes back. This goes back to his high school days too, right? Like, he was injured his senior year as well.
Well, we're talking, I mean, I believe his senior year, he tore like a ligament in his hand or something. And since he's been at Minnesota, it's been kind of these soft tissue injuries. He needs to stay healthy. And when healthy, Chris is going to be starting, as he should be. Now, if Chris is going to be already battling injuries, we're not even a week into fall camp, that leaves me a little bit of hesitation, because Minnesota needs him and Bateman to help Tyler Johnson, who, by the way, has looked has looked the part like he did last year. And again, for Tyler to really shine and to improve upon his 35 catches, 675 yards and 7 touchdowns from last year, he needs help. Bateman is help. Ottman Bell is help. And I think Demetrius Douglas can help. I just think don't expect a whole lot from him other than in the short to maybe intermediate game. That's where Demetrius Douglas in this offense should make his hay, is on these bubbles, is on these hitches. Just at, he can get separation in those 5 yards and then get you an extra two. He's not the game breaker that, you know, Chris Ottman Bell can be, that Rashad Bateman maybe will be this year. But again, in that short to intermediate game, that's where he's kind of excelling here so far in camp. The issue is, once again, I mean, with Ottman Bell hurt yesterday, your number two wide receivers were Philip Howard, which is fine considering he was the second leading receiver in yards total last year. And Philip Howard, in his own right, needs to stay healthy. But you also had walk-ons Matt Morse, Clay Gary, Paul Gossage. I mean, there's just no depth here, especially with Eric Gibson and Jornell Manns, the two other 2018 wide receivers that Minnesota brought in. Jornell recovering from ACL, that's been known. He's likely not going to play this season. But Eric Gibson likely had a shot to make the two deep if he was healthy, and he hasn't been able to practice yet. So at this wide receiver position, again, I think that's the big thing. If Bateman continues to play as well as he has, he's absolutely going to be starting. With Ottman Bell out yesterday, he was running with the ones already. I mean, that kind of tells you something about where Minnesota feels he's at. And then if Ottman Bell's healthy, he's going to be in there with Douglas. So again, if you have those core four and maybe Philip Howard is your fifth, I feel okay. But if Minnesota has injury Armageddon again, especially at this wide receiver position, it's going to get dicey.
All right, let's talk a little bit of running back. Boy, the arguably the best player on the entire roster, Rodney Smith, will be featured here. But then again, a continuing story. I feel like we're kind of beating a dead horse, but you know, just no proven commodity behind him. And the truth of the matter is we've seen throughout Big Ten play, and really for the Gophers in recent years, you can't just rely on a single back. You need to have the Glenn Mason coined a pair and a spare. They're down Shannon Brooks already to injury. But, you know, where is that depth going to come from, Ryan?
That's a good question. And that's one of the big things that I'm going to be looking for going forward, because physically, I think Nolan Edmonds and Bryce Williams look the part. If you want to check out pictures of all the running backs that Minnesota has, head on over to my Twitter page, Gopher Illustrated, check out the photo gallery that's on Facebook. You can see that Nolan Edmonds, I mean, he looks the part of a Big Ten running back. Bryce Williams, he looks the part of a Big Ten running back. I think that they're definitely going to give Mo Ibrahim, and they've been repping, I think, equally with him in that second unit, trying to figure out who that number two or number three running back is going to be. And I'm not meaning to kind of sound the alarm here, but Shannon Brooks has been working out with the injured guys. And that's to be expected. Again, he had ACL surgery. You'll check. If you want to go look at the photo gallery from yesterday, I took a picture of Shannon. He looks as good as he ever has, and you'll notice his knees. He's not wearing any knee braces. And I watch him off with the injured guys run, and I'm trying not to get my hopes up because I don't want him to play this year. I've said that on this podcast. I've said that on GI. Just knowing how important he is to 2019 to be likely a bell cow back. And I kind of posed that question to an important Minnesota offensive staff member off the record. And I was like, hey, like, don't play him. He's like, I really don't want to, well, you know, or we really don't want to in that regard. But if he's healthy, and again, Minnesota is going to take every precaution with him, but if he's healthy in November, and we need to get to a bowl game, Shannon Brooks is going to get some touches. So something to keep an eye on as we get into November and seeing where Minnesota's season is at.
Reminds me, has anybody locked down the the Red Shirt Watch Twitter account for Gopher Twitter? Because I think that really needs to happen. Otherwise, how am I going to know who's redshirted and who's not redshirted?
Lee Peterson, if you're listening to this, I need you to start that Twitter account tonight. Or tomorrow morning, whenever you're listening to this. I need Gopher Twitter Red Shirt Watch to be a thing to help me keep track of things come September, October. But I haven't really, in Minnesota hasn't either. they want to see how these running backs kind of deal when the offensive defensive line are able to go at each other. Because, yes, physically, Nolan Edmonds, Bryce Williams look the part. But how are they able to read holes? How are they able to kind of see when these holes now close in the Big Ten compared to what they look like in Georgia and Florida football?
Mm-hmm.
How are they – and again, I think this is such a true statement just across football. Roddy Smith is very good as a pass protector. Now, if you're expecting – if you want to play Big Ten football, you have to be able to, especially as a running back, you have to be able to protect your quarterback. And so that's going to be another thing that's going to be decided here in the next couple of weeks is – which one of these running backs can pass protect? I mean, it's the same way in the NFL. You know, I know likely a lot of our listeners play fantasy football and they're taking, you know, these shots on these running backs here come at the end of the month. Well, these coaches come out and flat out say, hey, you know, Aaron Jones from the Green Bay Packers, you know, he's a great running back, but he's having some issues in pass protection and I can't play him if he can't pass protect, because if he comes onto the field, the defense can just key on, hey, he's going to get the ball. And he's not going to, you know, try to protect it against his quarterback. So, again,
right.
Seeing how Bryce Williams, Nolan Edmonds, and Mo Ibrahim pick up the blitz in these next 2 weeks, being able to see how they read holes, how they're able to bounce, how they're able to do some different sort of things. Physically, they look the part. But, again, I think there's a lot that's yet to be determined there.
Okay, just want a one-word answer for this. Did Roddy Smith make a mistake by not going pro?
No.
Okay.
The word I heard was he had a late round grade, and knowing that he came back as, once again, he has an opportunity to break essentially every rushing record at the University of Minnesota.
Right.
So he's going to come back and try to do that and see if he can't boost his draft stock.
Right. All right. Okay. Tight end. This is a position group I am fascinated by, mostly with, you know, Seth Green moving there. Additionally, you've got, you know, Span Ford. I forget his height. It's like absurdly tall too, but very athletic. But you've got some guys, like a Kokeef and others that are going to get some run. I'm just curious about this group in general.
Another group that, number one, has always been on the opposite side of the field for me through two practices.
Sure.
But in that same breath, I am so intrigued to see what Kirk Ciarrocca does with Clay Patterson's group. Just because there's so many different skill sets that I think need to be utilized. Like Kokeef is likely Minnesota's starting tight end. He's battled some injuries in the spring. He looks fully healthy in the fall. He's Minnesota's best run blocker, which for a team that's likely going to run the ball 55-60% of the time, you really want somebody to be able to help your tackles being that glorified six offensive lineman. I think put Colton Beebe in that same regard.
Right.
I think those two are kind of your run blocking, well, along with Bryce Witham. Bryce Witham is healthy, and I don't know what to feel because it feels like Bryce Witham has been a Gopher for, I mean, it feels like 20 years, but he's likely only been here 4 years. And seemingly by the time Friday comes around, if he's still healthy, I think that's the longest he's been consecutively been able to be healthy. He just seemingly has battled a various amount of injuries. And I know that some of the Gopher building are high on, hey, if Bryce is healthy, Bryce is going to help us. I'm like, all right, well, he's got to stay healthy for me to kind of wrap my mind around that.
Right.
Throw Bryce with him into that same group. And then you kind of have your two pass catchers in Seth Green and Brevin Span Ford. And I think potentially throw Jake Paulson in there as well. I'll say this, because I've already drummed up the Seth Green hype train enough. You know, Fleck wasn't kidding when he said, once we switch Seth off a quarterback weight plan into a, by weight, I mean weight room plan,
mm-hmm.
into a tight end weight room plan, you know, the kid blew up. And I mean, the kid did blow up in terms of, you know, he looks like what Marquise Gray kind of looked like during his days as a Minnesota pass catcher. I mean, the kid is extremely athletic. The kid is filled out at 6'5", likely around 250. I mean, he looks like someone that plays at the next level.
Yeah.
And while, you know, Seth Green looks that way, I think maybe the better pass catcher between him and Brevin is Brevin right now.
Sure.
Now, Brevin has worked exclusively with the tight ends, essentially the same with Seth, even though they're kind of giving Seth some different things in individual time. But Brevin, being 6'7", and having a pair of hands the way he does, being able to move as fluidly as he does, again, I'm going to keep saying it. You can't keep Brevin off the field because he and Seth have such a unique skill set, especially if wide receiver injuries happen again. That's where having those two having positional flexibility, you know, say Ottman Bell goes down and you need somebody to help out Bateman and Johnson and Douglas, well, then kind of figure out a package where you can put in Seth Green and Brevin Spanford for 15, 20 plays to keep these guys fresh. So I'm going to be very interested to see. Again, these tight ends are tight ends and they need to block. I mean, I was a collegiate tight end. Essentially on most of your snaps, you're a glorified offensive lineman. So how are they able to block? Something I'll be watching the next 10 days.
All right, so defensive back, this is a position group. Again, there's some known really strong players. Again, battled injury. They probably have even less depth than some of these other groups. But, you know, I guess maybe starters that you're seeing right now or projected starters that you're seeing right now.
Again, by projected, these are the starters that I have seen through 2 days of camp. I have seen Keandre Thomas be starting on one side, Antonio Chenault starting on one side. Your safeties have been Antoine Winfield, Jacob Huff, and then in the slot has been a combination of either Justice Harris or the Florida DB transfer, Chris Williamson. Now, people are going to listen to that and say, hey, well, what was all this hype you were saying? Winfield's going to move around. How come he's playing strictly safety? Well, yeah, of course he's been just safety when the media has been there or the public's been there. You think they're going to show us anything? I mean, they already cut out team period of practice. I mean, we're a week in. It's not like we can spill these Russian nuclear codes to anybody. But just trust me when I say, if Minnesota has Keandre and Chenault and Williamson healthy, that allows them to move around Antoine Winfield into different spots because, you know, say you want to move Winfield into the nickel spot so you can have him in the box, potentially blitz, do some different things. Well, okay, maybe you throw Chenault back at safety and move Williamson to outside corner. I mean, it's going to be a package to think about. So, again, the starters will look fine. The issue is behind them because we're talking about, two DBs of Coney Durr, which coming off that ACL injury, I'll say this. Coney Durr through the first week of camp has looked as healthy as I think he's been since that bowl game where he tore his knee. The issue is how long is Coney going to be able to stay healthy? Because how long until that knee flares up? Because that's what happened last season. Well, maybe 2018 he's having a Breann Body Calhoun resurgence after Breann tore his knee, and now Breann's starting at nickel corner for the Cleveland Browns. And anybody listening to this know this is also a Breann Body Calhoun promotional account, considering I think everybody knows the friendship that he and I still have. But is Coney Durr going to be as healthy as Breann was then that year he came back, or is it going to be like last year? I don't know. The coaching staff doesn't know. Hell, Coney doesn't even know. If Coney's knee continues to, when he wakes up in the morning, be fine, not irritated, not sore, well, that's great for Minnesota's defensive back core. If it's not, well, you're going to be looking at true freshmen like Terrell Smith, who's been the two cornerback. C.J. Smith, who's been a cornerback, a true freshman there. Josh Awney from Highland Park, Minnesota. He has been the second safety along with Calvin Swenson, a walk-on from Wisconsin. And then you've also been able to kind of see some things in a walk-on by the name of Jordan Howden. I know that some people brought him up to me at practice on Saturday saying that he flashed. I saw him take 3 reps of one-on-one against receivers. He won all 3 reps and broke up all 3 passes. Now, yeah, breaking up passes is great, but as people know from listening to this, that's what Antonio Chenault does, but he can't play against the run. So, again, when we look at how things look on Friday, Monday, next Thursday, how is he able to play against the run? How is he able to make tackles in space? There's a whole nother side of playing cornerback than just breaking up passes. But it's very youthful back there, Luke. I'll say that.
Right. Okay. Probably the moment everybody's been waiting for. We have 2 quarterbacks on roster. Really, well, 2.
Is there a quarterback competition I'm not aware of?
Well, hold on. There's 1 scholarship quarterback, 1 who's going to be scholarship, and then you've probably got 2 walk-ons.
No way. Yeah. You're telling me Minnesota has 2 quarterbacks on the roster?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And I think
I don't get daily tweets or message board threads about it. How was I supposed to know?
Well, I don't think you were, but I think that both will play. But, you know, most people want to know who's going to be the starter now and maybe who's getting the most reps now and who's got the higher potential ceiling, right? I got to imagine that those are kind of the three main topics you're going to want to address tonight.
All right. So start me off with question one. I was kind of spacing there. If we're anything, we're honest on this podcast. Well,
I got to imagine right now they're splitting reps, right?
Yes. You can tell that my mind kind of drifts to a different place because I get the quarterback question so freaking much.
Right.
But yes, they're splitting reps with the ones, whether that's an individual, whether that's when they got the team on Saturday, whether that was from the little bit of team that was intermixed within the individual sessions on Tuesday. Yes, they are splitting reps pretty equally, I would say, that being Zach Anixon and Tanner Morgan.
All right. So then I guess right now, I mean, what are you seeing out of them because they're splitting reps, but more so maybe who's got the higher ceiling at this point in your opinion?
Zach Anixon. I think that Zach's combination of physical attributes and arm talent are special for what a freshman is. And there are just some throws that you see that Zach can make that Tanner can't. Like Zach being able to place the ball perfectly back shoulder 35 yards down the field because he, number one, judged the distance correctly, but number two, he had the perfect amount of loft and he had the pinpoint accuracy to say, hey, I'm going to put it on that dash line and I'm going to gauge the speed correctly. You know, but I guess more importantly or more impressively to me, Zach, you know, can make some throws like a 12-yard out or a 15-yard post corner where, again, only the receiver's been able to catch it. I mean, he just does some things with his arm that are special. And I know from hearing Kirk Shiraka speak yesterday and just from talking with people around the building, there are a lot of people on the offensive staff that are very high on Anixon. Yeah, because he can make some throws, but he's, you know, what has been described to me as a very football smart quarterback. In the same, what I mean by that is he, number one, spends a ton of time. I mean, a ton of time watching film and just the way he's able to have that processor that I talk about in his head, you know, with all these quarterbacks. And for those of you, maybe we have some new listeners, the processor I'm comparing to like your computer processor. How quickly does your computer process the information and figure it out and make the next right decision? Well, it's the same way with a quarterback. How quickly can he process the defense, know what the routes are for that specific play, and know that, yeah, this receiver may not be open right now, but because of this coverage, he's going to be open and I'm going to throw to his spot, and that's where he's going to be when he breaks out of his route, and that's going to be a first down. And I've just heard from people around the building that Anixon's ability to comprehend different things like that at where he's at in terms of being an 18-year-old is special. So I think the higher ceiling is Anixon, but in that same breath, I think what Tanner Morgan does, and I don't think he has as high of a ceiling as Anixon, but he is the safe option. I mean, if Anixon's the home run, Tanner is the safe double every day of the week. You know what you're going to get in that safe, consistent play. And where Tanner, in my opinion, is better than Zach is, number one, he's been in the offense a year longer, so he knows more things about a Kirk Shiraka offense, the way he wants to run it, different things like that. But Tanner's also much better when things break down. When Tanner being the smaller, more agile of the two, Tanner being a gracious 6'1" and Zach being a legit 6'3", the most impressive thing about Tanner to me is when things break down, whether that's pressure right up the middle or he has a defensive end come around the side and he feels the pressure on his back, you know, whether he's scrambling left, up the middle, to the right, his eyes remain downfield. And that's exactly what you saw in the spring game, and that's translated back onto the field here in fall camp. His eyes remain down the field. And not only that, he finds receivers, he delivers an accurate throw, and the play is extended. How many times have we seen in the last few years that the Gopher quarterback, once he feels pressure, eyes immediately go down to the green, ball is immediately tucked, and he's running for his life while there's potentially a wide receiver with no one within 10 yards of him kind of doing jumping jacks saying, hey, look at me. With Tanner, I can assure you his eyes would remain down the field.
All right, so I guess projecting, let's just assume 2 weeks from now, who do you think's named the starting quarterback, at least for the first week? Because I don't think there's any question they're both going to play, right?
Yeah, and that's where you're saying, who do you think is the starter? I don't know that it matters. Like, sure. Because I think both start games in September. I think, and the one who put this, you know, that kind of confirmed this with me, you know, I was having this discussion with Andy Greeter of the Pioneer Press, does tremendous work for the Fish Wrap on the east side there, that I just think it goes so similarly to what, you know, PJ did last year in that breath, that the reason that PJ can get away with that is, hey, we have two young freshmen. We both want to get them reps. We want to see what we have with both because we want to have experience in both going into Big Ten, which makes sense. Again, so say you give four starts to Tanner and then something happens, considering Minnesota's had to play two quarterbacks every year except for one in the last eight. You don't want to have Zach Anixit's first game being at home against Iowa. I mean, that's a good Iowa defense. Yes, you'd have a bye week to prepare him, but even that, you want him to have a little bit of experience. So I think Tanner Morgan, Liz, until Tanner can get beat out, and he's been model, he's just been Mr. Consistency, I think he's your starter, but I think both start games. I think both get time in the non-conference because Minnesota, number one, needs to give them both experience in case something happens with injury or poor play. And number two, they want to see what they have in them, especially with Jacob Clark and Cole Kramer coming in next year. They need to figure it out. So I think Tanner is your starter as we sit here on August the 9th, and then Luke will come back that third/fourth week of Honest, and PJ will have named Zach Anik said the starter. Everybody will throw an egg at my face, but it is what it is. So,
here's maybe the harder question. Do you think that they try and only play Anikstead four games so that they get the red shirt?
No.
Okay.
I think if Anikstead proves that he's the better option this year between the two, I absolutely think that they have no issue pulling a red shirt. Because, again, you'll have Jacob Clark and Cole Kramer coming right in. But, you know, maybe we get to that Maryland game. Or, excuse me, the Iowa game. Because Maryland will be game number four. And the nice thing for Minnesota is this is exactly what I think will happen. Is when that bye week comes, it couldn't have come at any more perfect time, in my opinion, for Minnesota. As I say that 7 weeks out. But what I mean by that is you'll have four games in. And it gives the staff kind of a week to figure out if we have played freshmen in those first four games, or basically anybody who still has a redshirt available, what do you want to do? I mean, what do you want to do going into that Iowa game? Do you want to have them not be available to maintain the redshirt, or do you want to keep moving forward and burn the redshirt? I think it's going to be an interesting predicament because no college coach has the perfect answer for it, and each individual player is so unique.
And
so,
no coach even has a strategy, right? I mean, no one has a proven strategy.
Every coach will have a different strategy because everybody will have something be different. That every team's going to be in a different place. Some of these guys are just going to have to play for depth reasons because injuries happen ahead of them. Some of it's going to be performance-based. But again, with Minnesota's quarterback specifically, that Iowa game is going to be extremely, extremely interesting to watch because I think both playing the first four games, and then what does PJ and Kirk do in that bye week? Do you want to go ahead with Zach? Do you want to go ahead with Tanner? How do you want to play it? It's going to be very interesting to see come October.
It's got to be one of the more intriguing storylines of the whole college football season is this whole redshirt situation with having the opportunity to play four games and still maintain your redshirt.
With this quarterback thing specifically, I have no issue burning a redshirt.
Sure, I don't either.
I mean, it's if Zach Anixed is the one that gives you the best chance to win, and it helps Minnesota get to a bowl game this year to, you know, show the casual fan wins and losses, you know, maybe Minnesota making progress, I'm fine with it. And in that same breath, I mean, these coaches know that they have to win eventually, and if Zach gives them the best chance, they'll more than likely go with it. But again, it's going to be an interesting thing to kind of follow here as the season continues to get closer and then go on.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting storyline to follow all year. So, well, I want to thank everybody for listening. We will be back next week with a special teams special podcast. So look out for that. And want to thank you all for listening. And if you would like to, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes and or any podcast aggregator you're using, and maybe just share it with a friend. We'd appreciate that greatly.
I did look and see it popped up for some reason. That
sure.
Do you want to take a guess how many people have rate and reviewed the podcast? Take a guess.
50.
69.
All right. That's greater than 68, but less than 70, right?
It is very nice. You know, maybe the next time that we come back to this, if that could be over 75, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.